Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 12:42 p.m. this Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 26th, and there's a lot of news flow going on at the moment, particularly around the IPO market, the oil market, what's going on in terms of the political environment in the UK and in the USA. But what I thought I would kick off with is the this composite chart I created last May. To look at the total number of deficits that are running, or what's really the cumulative deficits that the major economies of the world are running. And it's currently sitting around 951 billion. And that's towards the upper side of this range that's persisted since about 2012. The last time the global economy was running a surplus was right ahead of the global financial crisis in 2008, and that didn't end very well. And then, of course, before that, it was right before 1999. And then, of course, we know what happened after that as well. Well, therefore, we can anticipate that with this massive fiscal stimulus that is being implemented all over the world, it's likely to be more stimulative than contractionary in its effects. But it is being counterbalanced at the moment because of the strength of the dollar. When we look at the total of central bank balance sheets, then it is contracting. And that's as a direct result of the strength of the dollar. The Federal Reserve has added in approximately 100 billion over the course of the last week, and that total is likely to continue to increase at least through the end of the quarter, but potentially quite a bit after that. The simple fact of the matter is that banks are fully committed, and they just don't have the available liquidity to commit to the market because of the closing down of prop trading desks at the major investment banks. Then there is nobody available to buy at low prices, sell at high prices. And that clearing mechanism that they once fulfilled is now essentially being, or the market is relying on the Federal Reserve to fulfill that function. Well, that also is increasing the quantity of money that's sitting on the Fed's balance sheet. The ECB is about to engage once more on its quantitative easing. It's relatively modest in scale, 20 billion a month, but it is increasing the size of its balance sheet. Japan is likely to do something similar. But the strength of the dollar is negating those relatively modest efforts. And the total of central bank balance sheets contracted again in here today. It's now back on the lows we saw in May. The dollar index, by contrast, is at a new closing high. And this does look like now that it is asserting on the upside. If we consider the fact that there was a lot of resistance around the 98 level, then it failed to sustain the move above it in August, but then put in higher reaction lows, bouncing from the region of the trend mean on repeated occasions. It's now finding support in the region of 98. The next area of potential resistance is around that psychological 100 level. And 100 was an area of resistance in 2015 and 2016, and it wasn't quite able to hold on to the break above it in 2017. But the consolidation that's been underway for most of the last year puts a lot of trading underneath this level. There is the potential that the dollar will be able to trade above the 100 level on a sustained basis on this occasion. What it rather does suggest is that eventually we're probably going to have to come to a multilateral intervention to arrest the advance of the dollar, but we're probably not there just yet. There is about $80 billion worth of US dollar denominated debt issued by Chinese high yield issuers that comes due within the next 12 months, and the higher the dollar goes and the lower the renminbi goes, well, then that is going to be putting those high yield issuers under a great deal of stress. I think it is worth highlighting that it isn't simply that the Chinese economy is contracting, but that they are attempting to implement counter-cyclical strategies. Companies like Tencent, Alibaba, Xiaomi, and a host of others have created their own lending operations, and they tout their interest rates as being just a few basis points, but of course, when you annualize those interest rates, they are very similar to what you see with credit card companies. The media seem to be very keen to say that most people don't really need the money, that they're just borrowing for very short-term considerations and that they're paying it back within a few days. But that is just not how credit works. The vast majority of consumers, when given availability of credit, they go out and borrow. And there is nothing stopping someone from borrowing from Alibaba, from Tencent, from Xiaomi, from Dianping, and then ending up with a very significant debt total. Credit growth in China is a serious boom industry. It's one of the primary reasons. Well, perhaps the other way of thinking about it is it's being enabled by the central government. They're not cracking down on these companies enabling this growth in credit. In fact, what China is attempting to do is to create a consumer class that can counterbalance its export-dependent sectors and its infrastructure development. It was those two pillars of the economy that drove the growth over the last 40 years. They're hoping that the consumer can do the same in the next 40. But what the consumer, of course, has to do is find somewhere to work while all of that is going on, and property and infrastructure and factories continue to represent big parts of the economy. The big question for companies like Tencent is whether most of their growth is behind them. If they are increasingly reliant on their credit arms, then slowing growth is obviously not good news, and that's before we even begin to think about the political overhang of having Communist Party officials sitting on their boards. But there is the additional question of when will the Chinese government decide that enough is enough and that they will stop trying to contract the economy and slow growth to try and unwind some of the leverage and try to start stimulating again. It is inevitable that they will eventually reach that conclusion. It's only a question of when, and of course, then the question is whether they can do enough quickly enough to arrest the clear risk of a recession. When we look at what's going on in terms of the USA, then they're terrified of a recession and they seem to be willing to do anything to avoid one. That includes a $1 trillion deficit on an annual basis. And then they are also willing to lower interest rates and potentially even engage in quantitative easing once more. So the S&P 500 is continuing to consolidate in the region of its peak from back in July. It continues to look like this is nothing more than a bullish consolidation in the region of this, the upper side of this 18-month range. When we look at the Nasdaq, it's a pretty similar story. Now, when we then go back and think about what's going on in the UK, well, one thing we can say about Wall Street is that it is willing to look past the risk of impeachment because it's obviously not thinking there is going to be one. The other point is that when you look at the USA and wage growth among racial minorities, that there was a Wall Street Journal article today talking about the fact that since 2013, Latino wages have gone up by about 20%, about 10% for both white people and black people, and about 11% for Asians. Well, the Latino demographic is going to be a big component of the next election. The next election in the UK is also going to be heavily contested. It's likely to center around the the Brexit debate, but the fact of the matter is that Jeremy Corbyn is one of the most reviled characters in British political history. It's going to be rather difficult for him to win, even with the disillusionment around Brexit. And Boris Johnson is a rather colourful character that is a proven election winner. Against that background, the FTSE 100 has bounced from the region of the trend mean. It's been ranging now for 3 years, and the majority of that range has been above the almost 17-year base formation. This continues to look like a first step above the base. Now, when we look at the pound, it rallied to unwind its oversold condition over the course of the last 3 weeks. It is now pausing. As long as it's holding that 120 area, we can give, I think, the benefit of the doubt to support building. When we look at the pound relative to the euro, then it has also unwound its short-term oversold condition. It has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. It's in the region of the trend mean and pausing here. It's about mid-range when we look at the 3-year range. Of course, what's also particularly interesting is the duration of this range relative to the duration of the range on the FTSE 100. The fact of the matter is that UK shares are trading at a relative discount to developed markets internationally, and that is likely to represent a bullish consideration if we can get past the indigestion of the Brexit question. And thinking about indigestion, then Saudi Arabia is rushing to get its IPO done for Saudi Aramco. Now, the index has been trending higher in a reasonably volatile market environment over the course of the last 3.5 years. It is now bouncing from an oversold condition, so there's scope for additional upside. But when they are looking at a valuation of 2 trillion and attempting to take or to siphon 100 billion out of the global investing community's pockets, we have to first question whether that is good value. But what are they going to use that money for? One of the primary avenues for it was to try and modernize the Saudi Arabian economy. Of course, it could just as equally be a war chest to go and fight a big war with Iran. So there are obviously some big considerations about the security of an investment in Saudi Arabia, and not least following the attack on its refinery and export facilities just last week. Against that background, the oil price has pulled back below the trend mean. It has at least stabilized around the $60 area. It had been stabilizing around this area prior to the attack. I do think that we're likely to see, or we were, I think it is likely that a clear catalyst will be required for oil prices to rise significantly from here. One point is that there is a significant backwardation going on all the way out to 2021. So, and when we look all the way out to 2028, the price is pretty universally above the $56 area. Generally speaking, break-evens for unconventional shale or unconventional oil and gas are around the $50 area for WTI. And when we look at that commodities curve, there is also a very clear backwardation. So, but there isn't the same incentive when you can only get upwards of about $52 going out to 2024 to really start to ramp up drilling. But the drilled but uncompleted wells are starting to get drilled, or to get completed, I should say. That is driving some additional supply out of West Texas. That is probably going to be an inhibiting factor in terms of the ability of oil prices to continue to rally. Then, when we think about natural gas, It got right up to test the region of the trend mean. Now it is pulling back again. It has broken that sequence of lower rally highs. The big question now is whether it is going to be capable of putting in a higher reaction low to confirm that the $2 area represents a more than short-term area of support. Nickel inventories are starting to contract, or they have been contracting for a while. Investors are worried that the export ban from Indonesia is going to create a shortage of the metal. Having had a really impressive advance, the price is stabilizing around the $16 area. Then, of course, we have the fact that electric vehicle demand continues to rise. It's still inconsequential relative to the market for internal combustion engines, but the growth trajectory is certainly there, and it's growing at double digits per annum. And when you are thinking about that, well, then doubling doesn't take very long. There is going to have to be a lot more nickel produced and of much higher grade to feed the battery sector. When we then think about the bond markets, well, treasury prices were in mildly positive territory in here today. But I do think that we have to pay some attention to the fact that when we look at the yield and the very significant compression that's occurred over the course of this year, that after the failed upside break above 3%, then that was a very clear technical trade. The dynamic of the failure was much larger than the dynamic of the breakout, and it suggested that we were going to go right back down and test the lower side of the range. Well, the range lows are around 1.5%, and we had a whopping upward dynamic 2 weeks ago from the region of 1.5%. That really does suggest that the peak is in for at least the short term and potentially the medium term for bond prices. At the same time, there is a cacophony of the commentary coming through from the financial media and investment analysts saying that the trend of bonds with negative yields is going to continue, that it is only a matter of time before the US economy succumbs. And there will be a clear requirement for even more bond buying. And then that will push the yield back or down to zero. And then, of course, there's the conclusion that it generally requires about 400 basis points of easing during a recession, and the Fed funds rate is currently only 2%, so they will have to do something extraordinary to try and combat the next recession. But that isn't an imminent risk, and there is clear potential here that bond prices could start to come back down, and particularly so if Wall Street starts to push on the upside. We are definitely seeing a clear effort to stimulate the global economy. It's not quite there yet in China, but it is only a matter of time. Europe is certainly going to continue to stimulate. Christine Lagarde has said that she's going to follow Draghi's suite of policies. There have been clear efforts to try and sway the policy initiative. You've had another German has resigned from the ECB board. That is almost like a badge of honor in Germany that you serve half your term and leave. But of course, what that is just a protest vote. It plays well at home, but it does nothing at all to change the trajectory of policy within the EU, which is very much skewed towards additional stimulus. When we think about the outlook for the Bund, they tried to issue bonds with negative yields. It is the euphoric dream of any government to be able to issue zero coupon perpetual bonds. We are just not, we're not there in terms of that particular, of realizing that dream. But what we can see here clearly is that there is a very oversold condition, that we've had a big upward dynamic, the largest we've seen in years, and there is the scope now that what we're seeing is a higher reaction low, and that there is a clear potential that before things get worse in the a global economy, that they could potentially get better, and that even bund yields could go back up towards that zero bound. Well, when we think about the euro, it is certainly under pressure and moved to a new low in here. This continues to represent a downtrend, and it is now trading squarely below the 110 area. We can also see from the weekly chart that the pace of the decline is increasing, so Europe is still devaluing its currency. Now, when we think about the commodity complex generally, the continuous commodity index is in the region of the 400 level and its trend mean. The Australian dollar is still distributing below the, and it still has this step sequence downtrend and has encountered resistance at the lower side of the most recent of those ranges, and it still represents a clear downward trending environment. The New Zealand Central Bank demurred from lowering rates earlier in the week, but the New Zealand, excuse me, the New Zealand dollar remains in a downtrend as well, despite the fact that it is in the region of its lows from 2015. When we think about commodity currencies, they are heavily exposed to what's going on in China. And the rand has encountered resistance now in the region of its trend mean. The Brazilian real is still contending with a slowing domestic environment, and it is pausing in the region of its lows over the course of the last 5 years. They are extremely dependent on China's willingness to support the economy, and we're simply not there yet in terms of that support. The A-share index in here today was in negative territory, and that's a further example of an unwillingness to support the economy. When we look at India, then we've had the very large upward dynamic following the change of corporate tax rates, and that continues to look like an index that can move higher from here. When we think about the banking sector, some of the smaller regional banks are being put under pressure that should start to send additional deposits towards the state banks, and the state banks are getting clear support from the RBI. The banking index has bounced from the psychological 30,000 level. It's back in the region of 35,000, and this is still a trending environment. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.